My name is Deb.
Hi, Deb.
I am an alcoholic and a compulsive overeater and discovering the joys of being a codependent, and I'm happy to be here with all of you today. I have done this work as it's laid out in the big book with the help of a good book step study sponsor and a loving God. I've started to make my amends and working on them, and I'm willing to complete them. I'm doing my best to live in steps 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. So this chapter, the working with others one, to me, like some of the other chapters, I think the one about how it works does it also. But this one to me is very much an owner's manual. It's direct instructions of what to do. And it really heads out right from the beginning. This is our 12th suggestion, carry this message to other alcoholics. And the rest of the chapter really deals with how to do that, how to carry that message. One of the things I think about whenever I look at this is I try to put it into the context of where is it in terms of what happened just before it. And the message at the end of the preceding one is basically faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. So it's starting out with that concept of, okay, now you've done all the internal work, now you've done your amends, now you've done your step 10, you're watching yourself every day, and now it's time for you to get on the road and help some other people. One of the things that I think about too with this is that, you know, I know that when I first came into recovery, all I wanted to do was to stop drinking. That was my first program that I walked into. I wanted to stop drinking. I didn't even want to learn to drink like a lady. I knew I couldn't. That was not going to happen because I tried to quit so many times. And I think like many people who come into 12-step programs, when we first come in, on page 77 in the first paragraph is we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. And that's the part that I didn't get when I first started the program. I think of it in terms of as an addict coming into recovery, how would I be unselfish? And this chapter does talk about that. You point out to your prospect that they need to be thinking of others. And it was like, thinking of others? I hadn't done that in a while when I was in the end stages of my disease before I turned myself in for some help. So it says, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. So in reality, this is doing, once we go through the process in 11 of praying for God's will in our life, in step 10, when we run into things that don't work so well, we turn to help somebody else in our life. So everything is moving us towards this point in step 12, which is about the altruistic approach to how do we make ourselves available to those around us who are still sick and suffering. And I think some of the reasons, one of my things in my background, I'm trained as a therapist, which is really interesting since I now identify as a codependent. It's like, oh yeah, that fits. But when I think about this, a lot of this instruction in here is about how to have a healthy relationship with another human being. I know the first time I was put in a position to sponsor somebody, I did it all wrong. I wanted to be her best friend. I wanted to bring her things that would encourage her. And then the rude awakening came that she was not ready for it. She had a significant mental illness. And this was my first sponsee, you'll recognize. And she sent out a text in the middle of a Sunday afternoon that she was killing herself. And thank you very much to everybody who had been her friend. Now, she didn't. But nonetheless, that was my awakening to sponsorship through NAA, and it was not one that worked well. I realized since then, I needed sponsorship as a sponsor. That was my wake-up call that I really needed help with that. But nonetheless, that case, although it's an embarrassing one to me, because it really identified the fact that I was trying to help her in ways that I thought were important instead of just carrying the message. And the beauty of this program is that it's about the message and the process. It's not about the things that go around the edge of it. I think certainly it gave me an idea of how, you know, in terms of the ways that it could happen, that it would be useful to other people, the ways that it wasn't going to be useful. And if you look at what really this section contains, I think other people who've talked about this, it really talks about how do you sit down with somebody that you don't know and have a conversation. My social skills aren't always so good, so sometimes it's hard for me to do that. I can do some of it, but this talks about how do you really get that person talking, how do you do it, and it's really by setting an example, by talking securely within our own experience, and that concept that no matter how far down we've gone, our experience can be used to help others. And I think that's what this really is about. And it talks about this in many places within this chapter about how to tell that story. I love the fact that the promises are up front. I can also remember that I really didn't want to sponsor initially, and when I was first in recovery, I didn't feel I had something to give. And very selfishly, I felt like my life was too busy. And I've since learned that that's not an option. If I want to stay in recovery and stay healthy, I need to remember the reason why I'm doing this. And again, this is a thread that goes through here, that this, the process of sponsoring others and carrying the message will help us individually. But the promise is life will take on a new meaning, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. There are not too many musts in the big book, and this is one of them. It's basically saying, here's the payoff. You know, you've done the work, and now in order to keep the recovery that you have gotten to through this, please don't miss out on the good part, which is the relating to other people in a way that is helpful to them. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot in our lives. And I see that all the time. I have more occasion to see that within, I go to a women's AA meeting, and at that meeting I can see that. There are many people just coming out of jails, coming out of halfway houses, and so on and so forth, so that there's a lot more opportunity for watching how that happens and being present at that moment when people are just starting this journey. The instructions that are given here, really, starts out with saying, you know, do your homework. Find out about the person as much as you can. Again, it's been pointed out before, the way that it's written here may not be the way it happens now. Most of us probably don't meet people through a 12-step call or through a hospital. We probably meet them in a meeting that we go to where somebody likes the message that you have and may approach you afterwards. The process then becomes to learn something about that individual, and then the mechanisms of how do you get somebody to trust you. If I think back to where I was coming in, I was pretty self-absorbed. Oh, get rid of the adjective. I was self-absorbed. I was feeling pretty down on myself and pitiful, and quite frankly, I couldn't relate to the people who were feeling good in the room. So this process of mirroring, of telling your story in a factual way, in a way that in some ways it's kind of like if you tell it as it really was in a bad way with all the details and the fatal qualities are present, that says, I hear many newcomers say, oh, well, my story wasn't that bad. I thought I was the worst one possible. It's kind of like when you do your fifth step. You're worried that somebody's never heard that before, but the reality is anybody who's been through addiction has had experiences that can be useful, and particularly at this point, and it's that issue of helping them to identify with you. You're not lecturing. You're not telling them how to do it. The big book doesn't give us, you must do this, you have to do it this way. It talks about tell them the story. And that really, it's as it says in that introduction part, is it's basically our power. Others can tell, there were other people in my life who could tell me, you keep doing this, this is not going to be good. And you could tell me that, I go, oh, I can quit later, I'll be okay, I'll just cut back, all of those things that come along. But the reality was, if you're telling me that this is what happened. And I start going, oh, this person's story is kind of like mine. This is how bad it got. And then it was, you can begin to see that that progression is real. So you start out by allowing them to identify with you. And then if they begin to start talking back to you, you start mirroring. You start using that tool of oh, yeah, I had that experience too. Oh, well, let's look at that a little more. And allowing them to tell their story and allowing their story to be real. One of the things I find interesting is that, you know, we think about people with special backgrounds as maybe being specially gifted with knowledge about the disease. And there are two examples in this. One is the person who may have religious training, who may have much more knowledge of you than you about the spiritual component of the disease. And then I think about, there's information in the history of AA of Dr. Bob, who had been part of the Oxford group and was very much into the basic steps that were related to that and the spiritual component of it, but he didn't have a clue that it was a disease, and he was a physician, which I find fascinating. He acknowledges that that's the part that hit him. When Bill Wilson talked to him about, this is a fatal disease, that if you keep doing this, you're going to be gone. And that, he says, is the thing that finally got to him, the thing that allowed him to identify as an alcoholic who really needed help. Even if you think people have special knowledge, I think about this sometime, you know, the quality of our recovery program, one of the high qualities of it is the fact that we come from all backgrounds. And the reality is that in this room, we're all equals. We all are here dealing with a potentially fatal disease, one way or another. And so those other outside issues don't have much to say about what we're doing. It also says that the message that we carry, again, thinking back to the early parts of the book, and it does refer to that, it talks about the message needing, that it cannot be one that has frothy emotional appeal. That's not going to work. So our stories, the message that can interest and hold these alcoholics must have depth and weight. And that, I think, is what you find particularly in the Big Book, Big Book Step Study, that we find that way of carrying that message, that we focus on the steps and the steps only. I've seen many people sponsor with, you know, incredible contacts every day. And I think it's a matter then, when you look at this, if you look at it in reality, it's not about getting the person into a house necessarily, or paying for their bills, or getting them daycare, or helping them with all their problems of life. The reality is the problems of life will be healed if you can be present in a way to help them through the steps. And I think modeling. I think of it as modeling, that by living the life that the person wants to be in, that's another way of being carrying this message to other addicts within our circle. Certainly, if you look at the way that they also talk about the fact that doing this work is going to help us. And I think that if you look at the story of Bill Wilson when he first got to Cleveland, am I right? Is it Cleveland where it was?
Akron,
thank you very much. I confuse my Ohio cities, I confess. So when he got there, I mean, the time that he met Dr. Bob, it was because he was feeling itchy and wanted to have a drink. He was basically pacing back and forth and deciding, am I going to get a drink? And at the other end of the hall in this hotel lobby, he had just lost a big business deal, one of those things that gets to all of us. He was, you know, betwixt and between, as we all are, and I guess the committee in his head was talking pretty loudly at that point. But at one end of the hall was the bar, and at one end of the hall was the directory of churches the churches and hospitals, and he did turn to that. So I think that concept that this is what gives us our safety and recovery. That each time we carry the message, and the first part of the chapter says, we build up that reservoir of some, assurance that day we will be okay. And by doing the service, that keeps us as sober as we can be, or as abstinent, or whatever it is. I think that the concept, though, is also the pacing. There is not going to be anything, there's not going to be any good at all in meeting with somebody if it's going to be forced on them. It's simply, and I love the part of it that talks about that we never talk down to the person, because I can remember seeing some people who found their power in sponsorship. That's not what this is about. This is not about how many sponsees do I have. This is not about I've got this many that have crossed over. It's not about I've got these sponsors. You know, it's about we are in this process together. We're on this lifeboat together, and we help each other to get through our recovery. And so that phrase about, you know, never speak from any moral or spiritual hilltop, I don't have more than the next person. I could go out and have a drink tonight. I could go home and have something I shouldn't eat tonight. I don't want to. It could happen. So I am no more secure than anybody else is in this program. But that next part of the sentence, and this is on 95 and the end of the first paragraph, simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they work for you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you'll do anything to help. And I think that's the crux of it, that it's about focusing on the recovery part of it without the other parts getting involved as much as possible. And it doesn't mean that we're not human beings and we help each other, but the issue is to remember, why are we here together? We are here to be, to recover and to carry the message is really what it's about, which is hopefully what is God's will for us to be the best that we can be and carry that message. It talks about also the fact that our issue is not about the creature comforts. Our issue is to focus on making sure they understand the depth and the weight of the disease, the potential for a fatal outcome or worse, which would be, you know, for some people being unable to control their lives. I think as one of the stories says, once you're in a mental hospital because of your alcoholism or your whatever, or you're in the hospital, you lose control. You don't have any control then. So I think that, you know, that issue of sharing in a way that matches what they're ready for and not forcing it too fast, allowing it to sink in, but being tough. You know, that concept, you know, it comes to mind as tough love. And, I, you know, comes to mind in this program, you know, I remember listening to a recording of somebody talking from, I think, the Ocala group. And the person was talking about how painful it was to be doing the writing. And the person who was presenting that day seemed to have a really good message. And so she approached her and she said, I'm really having trouble. It's so difficult. It's so painful. And the response was, then write faster. You know, and there is an ounce of truth in that, because the reality is we hold it in ourselves. That ability is ours. We determine how much effort we put in, when we put it in, how it happens. And yeah, there are life events. I know we have life events in this room. There are life events that get in the way of doing writing. But nonetheless, it's up to us to figure out how to do that. And I think one of the things that the intro talks about, not blaming anybody else for our problems, for our addictions and everything else, and taking responsibility for our lives. I think that's the first task of coming into this kind of recovery. I feel like it, at least for this individual, it has been. That sense of realizing by doing the writing, they weren't the ones who totally caused all of this. I played a part. I can alter my behavior so my life is better, and now I get to share it with you. What a gift. So I'm going to stop right there and be done.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.